You are listening to the voice of the frontline protector here at the Private Officer Beat Radio. Every week, you'll hear breaking news, topics of training, information for the industry of security, public safety, and law enforcement. So strap in, hang on, we're about to speed off in this episode of the Private Officer Beat Radio. Welcome to this edition of From the Legal Side. Today, we are talking about a very important topic, one that you will want to listen to and take notes, a topic that is so important in this day and age that it needs to be taught to every private security officer, every private law enforcement officer, every contract or proprietary officer, and certainly every law enforcement officer needs this information today like no other time in the history of our country. Hello, my name is Rick McCann, and this is a production of Private Officer International. And as I've been saying for the last few seconds here, this is very, very important. And I hope that we can sit down, take some notes, and circle back around and go over this again next week so that we all have a clear understanding of the importance of this subject matter. And that subject matter is the law and you. It is frustrating when I see people on social media, or I hear people, or I see video of people telling cops, I know my rights, when in fact, 99.99% of people do not know their legal rights, do not have a clear understanding of the law or the seriousness of disobeying the law, especially certain laws, and do not understand what your legal rights are and are not. In this episode, we want to talk about your legal rights specifically as a private security officer during a use of force investigation. I said, we're talking today about your legal rights during a use of force investigation. And I want you to write these words down. These are some of the very words that you will hear during the investigation. And these are words that many people do not quite understand fully, if at all. So I'm going to go over not only the definitions, but also what that means for you during a police investigation where you have used some level of force, whether that's less than lethal or lethal force, and what you have to do and what you don't have to do. So one of the biggest words is compel, comply. We hear that word all the time. Just comply with police and nothing will happen to you. Well, during an investigation, do you have to comply and to what extent? Warrantless. Everybody thinks the police need a warrant to do this, that, the other thing, and most of the time they don't. Probable cause. Again, everybody thinks they know what the word probable cause means. But they don't. Detained. When can law enforcement legally detain a person. Custodial arrest. What is the difference between a legal detention by law enforcement and a custodial arrest? Grand jury. It is unfortunate that most people, security officers included, do not know how our court system works. I was in a class just recently, and it had to do with the law and bail bonds persons, and they did not know the level of courts, how the court system worked in their own state where they are bail bondsmen. They don't know. Voluntary statement. What is a voluntary statement? When do you not have to give one? This is a very important type of training, one that I could definitely charge a lot of money for, one that we do teach in our criminal justice class. But today, on this edition of On the Legal Side, you're going to get all of this information 100% free. Pay attention. This is important to you because everything that you do and everything that you say can be used against you in an investigation and a court of law. Some other areas that we're going to talk about in this two-part series is Miranda rights. Oh, you got to give me the rights. You didn't tell me my rights. You violated the... No. We'll explain to you when law enforcement has to read you your Miranda rights and what they are exactly. Phone call to the attorney. Again, unfortunately, because many people pay more attention to YouTube than to do their own research, they don't understand. When does law enforcement have to give you a call so that you can call a lawyer? Is it now? Is it during questioning? Well, I don't have to say nothing without a lawyer. No, that's not true either. Impending investigations, ongoing investigations, grand juries. What is a grand jury? What do they do? We have a lot to go over, and this is very serious business. So let's talk about the process of a use of force investigation by law enforcement against or involving private security or private law enforcement, for that matter. When police respond to a call where a security officer has been involved in some type of use of force, whether that be physical force, whether that was use of a less than lethal force weapon, chemical spray, taser, baton, or this is a situation involving deadly force. Now, there is a difference, obviously, of a incident involving deadly or lethal force and an incident involving a fatal shooting. Not every lethal or deadly use of force results in taking of a life. So there are three types of use of force investigations that law enforcement can conduct involving private security. A use of force that was less than lethal force. The security officer used their fist. The security officer slapped or pushed a person. The security officer used chemical spray or taser or baton or some other force that was less than lethal force. Then police can conduct a lethal deadly force incident that involve usually firearms. some type of force that could have resulted or did result in the loss of a life. And the last type of use of force investigation will be a true fatal shooting, a lethal force incident involving the loss of life at the hands of a security officer. And that doesn't have to be a shooting. It could be a stabbing. It could also be security trying to detain a person, a person resisting and fighting, security using physical force to keep that person on the ground, and he succumbs from that interaction with security. That's a use of force, fatal incident. And we're not talking yet about justifiable or not, but justifiable is another one of those words that you need to become very familiar with, because again, many people do not know what that means. Oh, it just means that I was justified. No, actually, sometimes it's a on the borderline incident, could go either way, and after investigation, they rule it a justifiable or a non-criminal homicide. It's still a homicide, but it's not being prosecuted as such. Let's start off during this episode and talk about the first two words that I mentioned in the beginning, compel and comply. Under the U.S. criminal justice system, any time that law enforcement is investigating a person for any type of crime, they cannot compel you. That means force you or otherwise persuade you to make a statement of facts against yourself. They may ask for a volunteer statement. They may ask you to give a statement of what happened, but they cannot force or oblige or persuade or pressure you in any form to compel you to make a statement. Now, one of the things that I have noticed over the last year or so, in fact, just during the month of August, it happened three different times that we're aware of, where security officers used force. In one case, it was a fatal shooting. And in two other cases, it was physical force. One in Philadelphia at the light rail, and one in Las Vegas at a casino. Security officers involved in any activity that warrants law enforcement response, whether that's defending themselves, use of force, they need to stay on scene and not run away. Because when you run away, like any other criminal, when you run away, you look like a criminal. You look guilty. You look like you are the suspect instead of the victim. It doesn't mean if you stay that law enforcement will compel you to give up a statement. They will ask you for one, but they cannot force you to comply with that. When you're involved in a use of force incident of any type, do not leave the property. The first call is to law enforcement. I'm the security officer at Walgreens. I had a shoplifting situation and tried to detain the man. He punched me. I got into a physical altercation. I need the police. My name is Henry Jones. I'll be waiting at the front door. The man has, he's on the floor. He's hurt. Now the dispatcher knows that we have a fight. It was in progress. It was involving security, trying to make a legal apprehension, use some physical force, a person may be injured, and we're going to send police and an ambulance. In the report, the police are going to put all of this information down that you were a willing, cooperative person, and this is going to help you even if they do wind up charging you with an assault. Flee the store. If you run away, that only makes it look like you were the aggressor. You were the person who overstepped the boundaries. You were the bad guy, the criminal. Don't leave the property. The second phone call will go to your supervisor. I'm working at the Walgreens, but I work for a contract security, Smith & Jones Security. Call Smith & Jones Security. Reach a manager, an owner. Let them know. I was making an apprehension. I had to use some level of force. I need to let you know that the police are on the way. Do not wait until police get there. Try and make that call immediately. Number three. While there's a lot of commotion happening, while there's a lot of things happening, as long as you are not in the line of being hurt, as long as you are in a safe environment, start making notes. Grab a piece of paper and a pen. Start writing down times, what happened, what was said, what did you feel like. Do it now, because when 2 hours from now, 8 hours from now, 24 hours from now happens, you're not going to remember quite the same. You're not going to remember those details. You're not going to remember word for word. I don't know how many times I have written on my hand and my arm and all kinds. I even wrote on my uniform one time. You got to write down those notes. Without them, your memory, word for word, what happened from A, what happened next, what happened after that, and after that, and after that, could be tainted from what other people say. Oh, yeah, you hit him first. He said something, and then it pissed you off, and you hit him. And write it down for yourself. Don't depend on other people to tell you what you did or what happened. And if the store, if the business, or if you are wearing a body cam, even better. Get the video from the business. You have a legal right to ask them. They don't have to give it to you, but you have a legal right to ask them for the video. That's why I really recommend that security officers today wear a body camera. Comply. The word comply. We use it in law enforcement and security all the time. All that you have to do, buddy, is to comply with us, you know, work with us, tell us what happened, just comply. If I tell you to put your hands on the dashboard, put them there, just comply. When you're involved in a use of force situation and police are there to process the crime scene, to take a statement, comply with them, be reasonable, but don't overstep. Don't tell them more than you have to tell them. Well, what? I don't know what to tell them. What do I have to tell them? Never, ever give a full statement without your employer or an attorney there. Cooperate. If it's a very small amount of force, if this is not a criminal investigation, and you can ask them, is this a criminal investigation or is this just for your incident report? Comply with them. But if you feel like you're being interrogated, there's a difference between an officer questioning you and an officer interrogating you. If you feel like you're being interrogated and you feel like that you're a suspect, then you do need someone there with you. You do have to give them, here's the information that you do have to give them. You do have to tell them your name. you do have to give them your contact information, home address, phone number, employer, date of birth, social security number, position. You do have to give, I don't have to give them nothing. I don't have to tell them anything. Yes, you do. If you impede an investigation, if this is an investigation that you've been involved in, either as the person who committed the crime, the use of force, or they're trying to determine if a crime was involved, then you have to comply and you have to tell them your information. If you do not cooperate with law enforcement during this investigation, you can be charged with obstruction of justice. You can be charged with impeding a criminal investigation. And now we're talking about you're automatically going to be the suspect. No matter what happened, you know, my experience is that most of the time when people don't want to cooperate, it's because they did something wrong and they don't want to self-incriminate. So they don't want to say too much and they don't really know what to say. And they're kind of hanging back going, I don't know. I don't think I should tell you. Comply with them. Like I said, if it's a point where you are being considered a suspect, if this is a criminal investigation, then yes, you do need to call someone else from your company, and maybe they should call a lawyer. All right, well, let's talk about this lawyer thing, because, again, many people don't understand when law enforcement has to read you your rights and when you have the right to have an attorney. So, number one, Miranda rights is something that is read according to the law to persons who are being questioned about a crime that they are suspect in. Now, if I'm asking you who your employer is, I'm not asking you about the crime. And if I'm asking you what your telephone number is, I'm not asking you about the crime itself. If I'm asking how long have you been in security, again, I'm not asking you anything specific about the crime I suspect you of, then I do not, law enforcement does not have to read you. It is called the Miranda warning, and it's basically a notification given by police to suspects during questioning or after an arrest. If police arrest a person, they do not have to give them their Miranda rights at that point, unless they are going to ask specific questions about the crime that they are charged with. Don't go to YouTube. Don't go to a jailhouse lawyer. Don't go to somebody who thinks they know the law and try to get your legal advice from them, because they're probably going to be wrong. Miranda rights weren't created until 1966. As a result of a U.S. Supreme Court case, Miranda versus Arizona. This is a warning to you that anything that you say can be used against you during this investigation or during the court proceedings if charges are filed against you. So, during an investigation, more than likely, they're not going to read you your Miranda rights, unless they specifically are targeting you right then and there as a suspect. And they're going to let you know, I have to read you the Miranda rights because I believe that you could be charged in this case, or you are going to be charged in this case. A right to call an attorney. This is another very specific right that people have, but not people being questioned. You have a right to an attorney, which is part of what the Miranda rights say, When you are being questioned as a suspect or you have been charged as a criminal on a criminal complaint. But if the person, the investigator, the officer is just asking you general questions, you don't need a lawyer, and he doesn't have to allow you to have a lawyer. We're asking you general questions, trying to sort out what happened here. We're not saying you're a suspect. We're not saying that you're being charged. We're not saying you're a suspect at all. We're just trying to find out what happened and piece it together to see, you know, if anyone should be charged in this situation. Remember, as a private security officer, you're supposed to be on the side of law and order. You're supposed to be on the side of the criminal justice system. You're supposed to be on the side of law enforcement. And if you begin hesitating and not cooperating and trying to impede an investigation or obstruct the investigation, that's not going to put you in a good light. How do you know when you need a lawyer, when you should stop answering questions? Like I said a moment ago, you can ask, am I a suspect in this case, in this incident? Well, it does look like that you used too much force. It does look like you didn't have to. Again, in many cases, police are going to turn this information over to the district attorney, the Commonwealth attorney, whoever is the attorney for the city or the county, and they're going to look at whether or not there's enough probable cause and enough to go forward with a criminal charge. In many cases where it involves a serious felony, a lot of times the investigator will call the on-duty district attorney and say, look, this is what happened. Do I have enough for a charge? And they will say no or yes. We just had a recent shooting in Georgia where they did just that, and the DA said, no, we don't have enough, but we're going to take it to the grand jury. Another case happened a few weeks ago, the same thing. Police said, we're sending it to the DA, and the DA said, no, we're not going to take the charge right now, but we're going to take it to the grand jury. In all use of force incidents, less than lethal and lethal, police can cause you to come to the station to give your statement and to answer some questions. Well, I don't want to go. I'm not moving from this place here. You can, in many states, be detained. In some states, up to 72 hours if you're a suspect, for them to get enough evidence together to get a warrant. Again, if you believe that you're a suspect, if you believe that you did something wrong, if you know in your head that you did something wrong, then at that point, you need an attorney and you probably shouldn't answer any more questions. Probable cause, custodial arrest, grand jury, warrantless searches, these are all things that many people believe that they know a whole lot about. When we come back from break, we're going to kind of enlighten you a little bit more so that you really do know what it's about. You see, private security today is being prosecuted at the same aggressiveness, with the same aggressiveness as law enforcement are being prosecuted. It is important that you understand your rights and the law, not just think that you do, not just maybe that you do, maybe you don't, who knows, it doesn't really matter, I'm just security, it does matter these days. More security officers being prosecuted, some for crimes that committed several years ago or incidents that they were involved in several years ago. Every year, private security is arrested for use of force more than a couple hundred times. 2017, security officers were arrested 2,228 times. You're listening to From the Legal Side. We're coming right back in a moment.
Human trafficking is slavery.
And it happens all over America.
Any child, any woman, any man could potentially become a victim of human trafficking.
I am a victim of labor trafficking.
I was victim of child sex trafficking, but now I own my body.
Human trafficking is any kind of forced labor.
It can happen to anybody.
I am a mother.
I am an author.
I am a son.
I'm an advocate.
I am an educator.
I'm a sister.
I am a brother.
I'm so much more than what happened to me.
I am strong.
I am brave.
I am outspoken.
I am compassionate.
I am a survivor.
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 I am a survivor of human trafficking.
Nurse, I need you to apply pressure to the head wound until I can get to it. I'm concerned she's lost too much blood.
Oh, no.
You in the corner, who are you? You're not supposed to be here.
She's my girlfriend, Doctor.
You need to wait out in the waiting room.
Please, Doctor, I want to stay with her.
Look, she's been badly injured. So if you want to do what's best for her, you need to let us do our work.
Please, Doctor, she has to be okay. I didn't mean to do this. I love her.
Wait a second. You were the driver?
Yes, but I didn't mean to. I swear, we went to dinner. I was just buzzed. I only had a few drinks.
Just buzzed? Why didn't you tell us that? In that case, your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great. You want to get out of here?
I can't believe this. Really, Doctor? She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this state.
Welcome back to The Legal Side. Today we're talking about use of force incidents involving private security, public safety. That includes, of course, loss prevention and law security, campus security, and private police. Many do not understand the law, even though they work with the law. We are a country of the law and order. However, in this day and age, even those who are trying to do the right thing, those who are on the front line, putting their life on the line, are often the suspects, and they're often the victims because the law just is being construed differently these days. I don't know if how the police operated in the 50s and 60s and 70s was right or wrong. I know that they got the job done. Times change. The laws are sometimes changed to keep up with the changing world that we live in. But I think more today it's about being politically correct and more about which side of the aisle you're on, left or right, and even the color of your skin. It seems like nationwide, more and more people are anti-law enforcement and anti-law. I just had a conversation over the weekend about trespassing and how this person just couldn't understand how malls and stores would have someone arrested for trespassing just because they were not wearing a face covering, a face mask. They were told to leave, but they didn't. They felt that they were entitled to stay. Police are called and they are arrested for trespassing. The person kept saying that cop was just hard up to make an arrest. He was just hard up, like, you know, he had nothing else to do or he needed another arrest under his belt or whatever. No, you broke the law. And private security has always been between a rock and a hard place. Not exactly law enforcement, private employees of a business. Not exactly law enforcers or considered frontline or first responder personnel, and thus not really completely covered as solidly as a law enforcement officer might be, although those times are changing as well. But as a private security officer, you do have a right to use force to defend yourself and others. You're taught this if you are in a regulatory state, of course, or at least you've heard it if you're not in a regulatory state that requires some minimal training. You do have a right to protect yourself Well, here's what we see time and time and time again involving private security. If a person pushes you, you don't have a right to give them a beat down. A video online about a week ago, for a second time, there was an incident at the Philadelphia Light Rail involving a contract security company and their security personnel in both situations. One time, it looked like the man was reaching into a bag, possibly for a weapon, after being caught trying to avoid the payment, the toll. And the security officer punched him, but then continued to punch him while he was on the ground. That's excessive. Now, a second video of a security officer also punching the man repeatedly when there was no threat at all. A security officer in L.A. this past month, in a confrontation with a homeless person, goes to his car, gets a gun, comes back and shoots the homeless man in the back and the side. The man was not a threat at that point. And even if he was, he wasn't armed. The video clearly showed. Bystanders and witnesses clearly testified. Police clearly were able to piece it together. There was no threat. The homeless man posed no threat to the security officer. If he did, why didn't the security officer who went back to his vehicle, why didn't he get into the vehicle and flee? You're under no duty to stay and defend yourself. Is it a lack of training? Yes. Is it a lack of supervision? Yes. Is it a lack of not understanding the law? Yes, definitely. Is it a lack of all of these? Yes, more than likely, for sure. In the use of force investigations conducted by law enforcement, they are not going to treat you any different than anybody else. They're going to look at the circumstances, what happened, and what caused the security officer to use that level of force. Remember, you have a legal right to use force to defend yourself. And in some states where you have citizen's arrest, you have a right to use reasonable and justifiable force to make that detention or arrest. But because of the lack of training, because of the lack of the knowledge of the law, true knowledge of the law, we find that many cases where use of force by security has been used, it's unreasonable, and it's really not always the fault of the security officer. He just didn't know better. Let's talk about probable cause. Everybody thinks they know what that word means, probable cause. They may even have taught it to you in your security training. All that it really means is that there's reasonable grounds. There's enough there to make an arrest. Probable cause has nothing to do with whether or not law enforcement can question you. It has nothing to do with whether or not law enforcement can conduct an investigation on you. It has nothing to do with putting handcuffs on you. Probable cause in the United States means that there was enough legal evidence or legal reasoning for police to either conduct a search or to detain a person or to make a legal, lawful arrest. It is part of the Fourth Amendment. We all should know that. Police will not make an arrest or conduct a search without probable cause. Many people think they know what that means. I just saw a video again over the weekend. This happened several months ago, but I just saw it over the weekend where police were called because of a domestic violence and assault that took place inside of a house. When police arrived, the key suspect was outside, but he could hear a woman crying. The officer could hear a woman crying and was trying to make entry into the house to check on her when the prime suspect stepped in the officer's way and eventually pushed the officer. Officers got into a big fight trying to arrest him, and they had to use force, including a taser type weapon, and all because he thought that he knew the law. He said, "You cannot enter my house without a warrant. You need a warrant. You need a warrant. No, I don't need a warrant. There's something in the law called exigent circumstance." Many times people assume and assert that they do. Oh, they assert that they do know the law. But there are more people that don't know the law than there are people that know the law. So in the case where the use of force incident, whether less than lethal or lethal deadly force investigation is underway, police don't need probable cause to conduct their investigation. They do need probable cause if they want to enter your vehicle. They do need probable cause if they want to search your briefcase. Now, they can ask you, and if you volunteer that, that's fine. No probable cause necessary. But probable cause is not an element of an investigation. Probable cause is not an element of questioning a person. Probable cause is not involved in taking a statement or processing a crime scene. That's not where probable cause comes in. Probable cause will come in when the officer wants to detain you, arrest you, search your property. If you are being arrested on a charge, then police have a right to search your body, your pockets, your clothing, and in some cases, if you're in a vehicle, they have the right to search your vehicle as well without a warrant. Here is the process for law enforcement when conducting a use of force investigation involving private security or either law enforcement. So as you know, they're going to come in and that they're going to ask, what happened? What's going on? It's important that you get your statement to them as quickly as possible. Tell them what happened. Give them the facts. You tried to detain the person for trespassing. He punched you and you punched him and was able to get him in handcuffs. In the story, that sounds like a reasonable situation. The man was trespassing. You told him to leave. He punched you and you shot him. That's not reasonable force. In many cases, police may not be able to make an immediate determination. Like I said, they may call the district attorney, the state prosecutor, the Commonwealth attorney, and that district attorney may say, yeah, we do have enough probable cause, go ahead and make an arrest, or no, we don't, we'll send it to the grand jury, or we need further investigation. An Atlanta security officer shot and killed a man several weekends ago. It was at a diner, and the man posed a threat, had a weapon, and was reasonably attempting to use that weapon to cause harm. The security officer shot and killed him. Police did not arrest him. They did question him on scene, let him go. It was reviewed by the prosecutor's office, and they declined to prosecute. It looked like a case of self-defense. How often does private security, private police, get involved in use of force incidents? Dozens of times a day. Even though we have our own news team, difficult to really pinpoint the frequency of use of force, because obviously, number one, it doesn't always get reported. Number two, when it does get reported, it doesn't make mainstream media, only local media, which is not often picked up by the internet or by other news sources. And number three, sometimes the incident is so insignificant to the news happening that day, we don't pick it up. But the use of force by private security has drastically increased over the last 10 years. And the use of deadly force has drastically increased over the last 7 or 8 years. In the last 2 years, we've seen it increased even more so. On the flip side of that story, 67 security officers have been murdered so far in 2021. 67 murdered. Almost all were killed by gunfire. It is no doubt. There's no doubt whatsoever, and it is a significant piece of information for us to understand that as security officers are becoming more aggressive, we're not there to observe and report now. We're there to intervene, to enforce the law, enforce the rules, get up in the face of people, detain people. With 1.4 million shoplifting detentions every year, Those, you might as well say, are arrests, 1.4 million arrests by loss prevention, retail security themselves every year. Those are arrests, detentions. There's bound to be some use of force. There's bound to be security officers injured and killed in the line of duty. There's bound to be interaction, pushback by the suspect. And you're going to have to use force to affect that arrest or detention. Use of force incidents are going up. Use of force lethal incidents are going up on both sides of the coin, security officer deaths and individual suspects or people that we're conducting business with dying because of our interaction with them. I don't believe that this is something that will change or slow down. That's why it's important to know your legal rights during a use of force investigation. Law enforcement arrives and the man is handcuffed and he's not profusely bleeding. He doesn't have big bumps all over his face and, looks like he's taking a beating. It's going to be pretty routine. Police are going to make the report, file the charges, and that will be that. But if they show up and you say, oh, yeah, he tried to run away. He tried to give us the slip. He tried to resist. And this guy's got bumps and bruises and bleeding everywhere. You're definitely going to be part of that investigation, and you may face charges. There are five things that we see frequently that causes us, and no doubt law enforcement, to wonder whether or not this was reasonable force. Number one, like I said, security officers involved in use of force incidents don't know when enough is enough. And these days, video's every place. Cameras are everywhere. And so if you begin to give someone a beat down and you're being aggressive and excessively using force, they're going to begin an investigation against you, and 9 times out of 10, you will be charged. Number two, more times now than probably ever since we've had the POI Association for 18 years, we see security officers that shouldn't be on duty at all. They have criminal records, felons. They shouldn't have a gun. We're seeing just this year multiple cases where security guards had guns and they were felons and should not have been there. And had they not been there, there would never have been a deadly force incident. This is a lack of background investigation. This is a lack of regulatory agencies cracking down on these companies. This is a lack of concern or care or consideration by the employer. They don't care. I'll put the guy out there. All we want is a body. Number three, we're seeing a lot of security personnel carrying weapons that they're not authorized to carry. They're not licensed. They don't have the training, whether they are in the vehicle or on themselves. A couple of years ago, I interviewed a security officer who used deadly force. He wasn't licensed, and he had it on him. Always carry it in my pocket, he said. Better to have it, not need it, than need it, not have it. But he killed a man, and he was charged with murder and found guilty of murder. Number four, more people are fighting security officers every year, resisting detention, not listening, not cooperating, not complying. You know, if they're going to do that with police, of course they're going to do that with security. You have to be reasonable. You have to understand. In some cases, walk away. It's not urgent. Get them another day or wait until police arrive. But we're seeing more security officers being aggressive and acting like it's now or never, and they have to use force to combat the person who's trespassing or the person who's shoplifting or the person who's not listening to them. It is a macho position, law enforcement and security, anytime you're in the military, anytime you're wearing a uniform, a gun, and a badge, it's macho. There are many macho people in the business, law enforcement included, and they escalate instead of de-escalate situations. And number five, over the years, we've seen enough cases where security officers were trying to do the right thing, but they didn't have enough training. They didn't have enough backup. They didn't have the support of the business owners, the company owners, and they just didn't know what to do, to be honest with you. And there are many cases where security officers just don't know what to do. They try their best, and sometimes they're put in very tough situations where they think they have to use force. They think they have to use firearms. They think they have to protect themselves. And it is oftentimes a fight or flight situation. And unfortunately, many times security officers backs up against the wall and they just don't know which way to go with this. Do I flee? Do I fight? Do I just, you know, use my firearm? What do I do? There's no one here to ask. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I just don't know. We have many cases involving security officers just like this. They just don't know. It is important today to understand the law and to understand what you can and cannot do and understand the process of law enforcement if you're involved in a use of force incident. Protect yourself by knowing the law. Know what it means for probable cause. Know what it means for custodial arrest. Know what it means for grand jury and so on and so forth. Next week, we're going to talk about going through the arrest process, being arrested for using force, and the court process, what to expect, and will your employer stand behind you or throw you under the bus? We'll talk about that and more next week from the legal side. Until then, be safe, be blessed, and we will see you back here on the radio.